So I finally get a Christmas sermon. I don't know about you, I've been through several stages when it comes to Christmas. As a child, of course, my family celebrated it. And it was always good family time, there was nothing negative. Naturally, once God touched my life and I saw where these things come from, what the origins really are, that type of celebration went away. Then as the years passed, I found I could at least tolerate the appearance of Christmas, if not its celebration. You have all the lights on buildings, on homes, on trees and gardens, and it gives kind of a warm look, an inviting look to an otherwise cold, dark winter. But then more time passes, and you realize, like all public and or religious celebrations, most people keeping these things keep them because they've never questioned them. They've never had any cause to question them. They have no purpose in life. And if this gives them an illusion of purpose, that's enough for most people. Like a colleague at work said to me this past week, any excuse for a party? It's enough that everybody's doing it. And whatever the situation, it's been that way throughout time. Ancient Egypt remained unchanged for 3,000 years because no one was ever taught to question. To us, that's unthinkable. You'd expect, at least with our American mindset, that commonplace human nature would always question the status quo, regardless of culture. But we can see even in modern events in different parts of the world, that really isn't the case. In the ancient world, no one questioned because no one thought to question. Rulers stood in the place of God. So who would dare to question? Or if they did, perhaps the threat of being branded a heretic and killed for it kept it all in check. Whatever the root cause, the effect in most all ancient societies was a distinct lack of profound questions, at least of the type that would make for major change. The remnant of that spirit in today's world, even in the United States, is why so many people, the vast majority, never really question fundamental truths or the trends of society, and why error and suffering continue unabated, and no one seems to know why. For all our Western reputation of being independent thinkers, we still tend toward conformity. They are doing it. Therefore, I must do the same. After all, I don't want to look that different, or be left out, or be thought badly of, or be rejected by whoever. It's a very powerful tendency in the human psyche. Canny politicians and religious types have milked it for all it's worth from the beginnings of civilization. Never underestimate basic human gullibility. If I'm pronouncing her name correctly, columnist Froma Harrop of the Providence Journal recently mentioned a 1950s study wherein researchers made up a totally fanciful piece of legislation called the Metallic Metals Act. And then they polled the public about it. Fully 70% of those who responded actually had an opinion about something that didn't even exist. More comically, at least to me, back in the 1960s, the proper staid BBC News offered an item to the British public complete with extensive on-site footage of Italian field workers bringing in the year's spaghetti crop. They were shown harvesting it from the trees, laying it out on tables to dry, and quite a few of the viewing public bought the fantasy. After all, who would question the accuracy of a BBC report? Most people don't really question. I'm always amazed at the sheep instinct in people, and I always underestimate it. And I mean sheep in the worst sense of the phrase. A following the crowd mentality, doing what everyone else does, regardless of the price or the pain, that almost insane desire to fit in no matter what. During the feast in Bend, Oregon this year, I heard a sermonette about questioning, which gave rise to this one, and it addressed the side of the issue that says, try to question less and support more. Believe more, trust more, and so forth. The thrust of the message was a good one. We live in a doubt-filled, negative age. People often expect the worst, and then they look for it. And when you do that, you usually find it, whether it's there or not. So the sermonette was saying, look to something more positive. And that's fine, and as it should be. When we're assailed with doubts, turn them around immediately into statements of faith in God and His care for your life, and even the fate of the church. That's a needful message and focus in our lives. But there's a necessary other side to that particular coin, because questioning is where all growth begins. When we're very young, we have to question to learn anything, like the little kid who's forever asking why. And when we begin our first jobs or our careers, people encourage us to not stay quiet. Ask questions. That way you learn something. Training, like formal education, provides a basis of some stock answers that operates like a foundation. But it's in the daily questions where you find true learning, challenge, and real growth. And whether we think about it this way or not, when God first called us, we were driven to look at questions that perhaps we'd never before considered, like the names of so many church booklets. Why were you born? Does God exist? Is the Bible true? Is there life after death? And without those questions, and so many more, we wouldn't know where we're going. So throughout the Bible, we find a God quoted as saying that He wants the right form of questioning in our lives. He doesn't want us to just take things blindly. He even goes out of His way to explain His motives, His desires, and His purposes, so we can understand the right answers to almost any fundamental question. Even Jesus is quoted as saying, I'm telling you these things because you're my friends. If you were servants, I wouldn't tell you. I wouldn't need to. So He's inviting us in. He wants us to demand proof, and He wants to provide it. Without the right questions and answers, there's no basis for trust, for that thing called faith. The right form of questioning engenders faith. The wrong sort causes strife and division and destroys faith. So this isn't about doubt-filled questions, which Paul addressed in 1 Timothy 1, verse 4, chapter 6, verses 4 to 5, as well as 2 Timothy 2, verse 23. Those scriptures are summed up in the last reference, wherein Paul was saying, have nothing to do with senseless controversies. And he'd been talking about endless speculations on things that can't be known, as opposed to building your faith on the things of God that are known. And asking questions also has to be balanced with the other scriptures, many scriptures that tell us to be content and to trust God for the right answers at the right time. But that doesn't negate questioning. The Bereans questioned. However, even in the brief mention in Acts 17, verse 11, it's relatively clear that they questioned from a very positive standpoint. For them, it wasn't, I'm from Missouri, prove it if you can. It was more a statement of open-minded, genuine desire to know God, so please show me the evidence. God wants us to ask why, and He wants to give the answers. Because the right type of questioning, as in any friendship, is reasoning with God and thereby learning from Him. And there's a thread running through the entirety of the Bible that encourages that form of exercise. including the famous incident of Jacob wrestling with God. And if you recall, that's in Genesis 32, after that episode was done, God renamed him Israel, which means striving with God. That's obviously not something that's negative to God. And isn't that akin to arguing with him, struggling for answers, and not letting go until understanding arrives? I've had some rip-roaring arguments with different people through my life, and they always seem to fall into two basic categories. The arguments, not the people. There's one type, the type you don't want, where you find yourself talking to a brick wall who refuses to hear any rational viewpoint. The type of person who would stay the course, even if that course takes you right off a cliff. The insecure ego is in full play. And that type of discussion usually ends with someone walking away in a huff, and nobody benefits at all. Then there's the other type. No matter how much yelling or screaming, no matter how much emotion, how much struggle, no matter how long it takes, it always ends up with closer relations as a result. And that means that both parties weren't arguing just to argue or to prove their own opinion. It means all involved deeply wanted to understand, to know, to learn, to find real answers, even if it means personal change. And that's no different than Jacob wrestling with God. That's God saying to us that you don't have to like the status quo. If you don't like where you are, ask questions. Matthew 7, verse 7 says, "Ask and it will be given to you. Search or seek and you'll find. Knock and the door will be opened." Those are positive encouragements, not someone running away from a debate. And that passage goes on to assert that God wants us to ask, to seek, to not be afraid to question, and to then depend on his love and power to answer us. Let me give you a quick review of some other scriptures highlighting this principle under a variety of conditions. Certainly encourage reading in the context, because I'm grabbing some just quickly out of their chapters. In Job chapter 13, verse 3, and 38, verse 3, and 42, verse 4, all these highlight reasoning with God, demanding of him, and then having God demand right back. By the end, God was saying to Job, "You want answers? I'll give you answers." Isaiah 1, verse 18 famously has God saying, "Come, let us reason together." That's an invitation to think, to question. 1 Kings 3 and 10 both speak not only of God inviting questions, but of someone coming to a king with very hard questions and not hesitant to seek real answers, no matter what. In Psalm 2, verse 8, God pointedly says, "Ask of me." Malachi 3, verse 10, has God telling people to test him, to prove him. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 21, talks of proving everything. And proving, or testing, requires questions. And in James 1, verse 5 and 4, verse 2, the lesson was to not fail to ask, to never stop asking for what's right, and underline the issue by showing that because people usually ask for the wrong things or with wrong motives, the world is filled with disputes and conflicts. So we're back to the point that there's questioning, and then there's questioning. The world is filled with useless questions. Just listen to the evening news. Whole families and whole societies have collapsed because people become complacent. They stop asking questions. They just go along. Right answers are no longer demanded. and then responsibility dies. Without questions, there is no understanding. Ask questions, and you can understand anything if it's explained fully enough, and if you're ready to learn. God, as we've seen, wants the right form of questioning in our relationship with Him and with one another. A true give and take to know and to be known. No relationship can be built without it. No wisdom is gained, no character developed, no lessons are learned. Because all real growth begins with a question.